are interviewing today with author and Los Angeles activist Yolanda Alaniz. Yolanda's in San Francisco in part to do an event tomorrow around her newly published book related to Chicano history titled Viva La Raza, A History of Chicano Identity and Resistance. Yolanda, give a brief introduction to yourself and then go right into you've been working heavily on immigrants' rights issues in LA. So after you introduce yourself, go right into some of the events on May Day that occurred on the streets of LA.
Thank you. Yes, I'm a longtime activist with the Freedom Socialist Party and Radical Women. I started in Seattle and then moved to Los Angeles a few years ago, so I've been active in LA now. And I'm also a member of the National Comrades of Color Caucus, which are the comrades of color in both RW and FSP. And we help set policy regarding people of color issues in both organizations. In Los Angeles, we participated in this year's May Day demonstrations, but also was mainly around immigrant rights. And this follows the 2006, which Los Angeles, we had millions of people that were out in the street in 2006. And it was the one that made real international news in terms of calling for a work stoppage, and a lot of people didn't go to work and came out in the street. That wasn't so much the case this time yesterday, but it was still very lively, lots of people, thousands of people that were there. The two differences I saw between 2006 and 2007 is that there was a coalition called the March 25th Coalition that organized the May Day demonstrations in 2006. And it was a coalition made up of a lot of different organizations, which included all kinds of different political persuasions, including socialist, feminist, and radical, and a socialist feminist organization, the Freedom Socialist Party, is a vanguard Trotskyist party, with also socialist feminist ideas. So we were involved in that, and that's why it was, I think, because it was so successful, because it organized the whole city and different organizations, and we helped organize the labor contingent in the March 2000, the May Day of 2006. And they wanted to make sure in 2000, because 2007, the march, which was March and Rally, were at MacArthur Park, and the police attacked the participants pretty heavily, and a lot of suits resulted from that. They even attacked the media, and it was pretty brutal. And fortunately or unfortunately, I missed it by about 5 minutes. I had just left when they had moved in. And so this year, 2008, they didn't want that same stigma on the police. The police were much friendlier, saying, you know, we're just here, you know, to supervise, making sure nothing gets out of hand. This is a very well, you know, organized, friendly march. And so it was, you know, it was that kind of tone. The demands, though, were different than 2006 and even 2007 because of the ICE raids that have been happening. And so you saw a lot of signs that said, you know, stop the ICE raids, legalize LA. And those were the main ones. But you certainly did see a tremendous sense of the police there. There just weren't out like they have been before, ready to kind of beat heads. They were very restrained this year.
Let's turn back to your work. Talk about some of the immigrants' rights issues and some of the activities you're involved in around the L.A. area?
Well, I like to connect it to back to my book, because I think what we found in doing a lot of the research for this book, it was amazing to see how much of the labor movement, actually most of the labor movement in this country in the early 1900s, came from immigrants. The Chicanos and Mexican Americans in the United States were very much affected by the revolutionaries that came over from Mexico that were part of the labor movement there, that were revolutionaries from the Mexico Revolution. And so the miners were tremendous in terms of the Western Federation of Miners, for instance, in the very early part of the 1900s, just, you know, would go out and organize immigrants and saw that it was important to organize like this, like an industrial union with all the different crafts and skills in one union, what Big Bill Hayward would say, you know, one big union. And they led a lot of the strikes. So the immigrants of our formerly, you know, the former immigrants are who we need to look towards, I think. Our history really is really important to notice what happened before even this immigrant rights movement. And the book really goes into a lot of detail on that. And I think what it means for us today is learning the lessons. When the immigrants of those days, when they organized across the board, when there was a lot of solidarity, when they didn't let the bosses divide and conquer them, they won their strikes. They won their sit-ins. There were great women leaders. I mean, most people know about Lucy Gonzalez Parson, who was a Chicana, also African and Indian descent, who was, she was married to Parson, who got killed, you know, who was tried and convicted from the Haymarket riots, supposedly riots. But anyway, so, and then today, those are the kind of leaders that we need in the immigration movement, which are unfortunately missing. And the March 25th Coalition is no longer the pillar of strength that it was in 2006, because it was divided by their own sexism and by the cultural nationalism, which is, you know, my race is better than yours, my race is more important than yours, kind of this super macho kind of thing. And drove a lot of the Latinos away from the coalition, as well as the women. And Radical Women and the Freedom Socialist Party we were the last of the organizations that finally had to resign because of the treatment of some of the men towards the women and because of their political affinity with cultural nationalism, which my book definitely talks about how it really affected the early Chicano movement. It really held the movement back. And it really divides and conquers. And it plays right into the hands of not only the bosses, but also the bureaucrats that run, you know, and also the system itself, you know. And another thing that is very evident in this year's march is they had a lot more Democrats speaking than 2006. And I think that's another turning point. When the March 25th Coalition decided that they were going to actually endorse candidates, which isn't what the coalition was set up to do, you know, that was it. That's when we had to draw the line, and unfortunately we had to resign. I know it's laughable, isn't it? In some ways it is laughable because
I'm laughing because I would have resigned too, but as if bringing those mainstream Democrats in is going to further your movement rather than restrain it, but continue to talk, because a lot of people do think that's a good thing to do.
It is laughable, and it's also very much of a heartache, because what really stands against us really changing this society to a better society and take it in a leftward direction is the Democratic Party. They are our main opposition. They are the people that hold us back. And I don't know how people can say they're any better than the Republicans, because they're still part of the capitalist system. I mean, even if you look at the history of the Clintons, what they gave us, you know, NAFTA, kicked women off of welfare, supported the war. I mean, you know, there are no better than the Republicans. And unfortunately, when that came to the table with the March 25th coalition, that was kind of what ended that, the radicalism, because then you couldn't have very strong demands anymore because you're trying to be liked by the Democrats. Like, I mean, ask yourself, what have they done for you lately? Not much. So, and they're appeasing them. And we need leaders today that are willing to break from the Democratic Party. And really, frankly, it's the only way that we're going to defend immigrant rights, women's rights, gay and lesbians, transgenders, people of color, is because their agenda is so counterposed to ours. The whole history of the Chicano movement has been used, Chicanos have been used, immigrants have been used as cheap labor. That is the essence of what this country was built on, the racism. And that was given to us by capitalism for, you know, for the growth of capitalism. And that's still the what we have today. And that's why I've become a socialist feminist. And I didn't wake up one day and say, this is what I wanted to be. It took a labor struggle at the University of Washington to change me into that. And working with radical women and the Freedom Socialist Party, frankly, the first white...
Your mayor was involved in a day of Antonio Saca, maybe only a few weeks ago, Antonio Saca being the president of El Salvador. So would you want that same politician out there in a radical coalition? But since we're on the topic, how has it been for you with your political perspectives working on these coalitions as far as trying to convince people that some of the strategies and tactics you would advocate are more effective than the nationalistic and the kind of liberal progressive strategies that seem to sort of take the norm for people who haven't learned activism that profoundly? And sometimes those more leftward and radical positions, in my experiences, get pushed out. But when they're included, in my experience, they're much more effective.
You're absolutely right. They are more effective. And what our comrades did that were representing us in the coalition, they wrote an open letter to the community. And I think that pissed off some people. But, you know, you got to let people know what went wrong, what went right, what went wrong, so we don't repeat those same mistakes. And that's, again, what my book does. Like, for instance, the United Farm Workers back in the days, and people may not know this, when undocumented workers were working the fields, the Chavez had a policy of calling the INS on the farm workers that were working, because his theory was that they took away jobs from U.S.-born farm workers. And here we have the Minutemen that think just like that. Of course, he had to rescind that policy because he got so much shit for it. He just was, people just really were really mad at him for that. But because he was, the United Farm Workers movement, which, of course, I address a lot in my book, because as a former farm worker myself, migrating from Texas to settle in Washington State, and my mother and my brother were both United Farm Worker organizers, I was, you know, very much in tune with the UFW and also the United Farm Workers of Washington. And they were run, basically have been run, by the church and the Democratic Party. So here we go again, you know. So I think going back to the open letter, it really showed the lessons of cultural nationalism and sexism, how divisive that can be. And a lot of people took that to heart and congratulated us for having the guts to write it and for having the correct analysis. And the men that were the basically the macho cultural nationalist sexist guys that they are, you know, just basically dismissed it. But we didn't expect them not to. Maybe they got mad about it. I don't know. But we didn't write it for them. We wrote it so people could learn that this is what holds us back. And I'm here in San Francisco because I'm doing a tour on Viva La Raza, A History of Chicano Identity and Resistance. And it has been one of the most important, I guess, missions I've ever done as a socialist and a feminist. Yes, I'm very proud of the book. Megan Cornish and I wrote it. It's from Red Letter Press, and people can get on Amazon.com or Google Red Letter Press, or go to our website, www.socialism.com. We were able to get that domain very early on. So, and we talk about that and the strength from the women, because that was my role at the University of Washington. When I went out on strike and I was part of a labor movement and I worked with radical women and Freedom Socialist Party for the very first time, and like I said, very first time working with white men and white women, I'd always pretty much, I was from a Yakima Valley girl. You know, we did the work. The farm workers were brown. The whites owned the businesses and the agricultural businesses, and they were, you know, they were our enemy. That's all I had to know. We were the workers. They were the bosses. Came to the University of Washington and ended up, you know, being in a working class solidarity with white men and women, which I never expected, but it was the right thing to do. And we had class solidarity between them and also the black men and women, because they were trying to get a declassification system and demote people. Were mainly the janitors and the food service workers, and which were mainly black and Latino and Filipino. And we had to eventually do a strike and then eventually do a sit-in in the president's office. The president was Hoeganus at the time. Everybody called him Hoeganus. And they wouldn't rehire Betty and Josie back, the two black elderly women who worked in food service. So we sat in the president's office. We got support from the Black Panther Party, a lot of the different organizations on campus and in the community. And he met our demands. And when we left, we cleaned up his office, and, you know, because we had a victory cake there, and we back cleaned the office and left, and that was fine. But, you know, what that taught me was the solidarity, class solidarity. And as a Marxist and having recognized that there is a class line, that was such an important education for myself and is the basis of why I wrote this book, because there are lessons to learn from it, and especially around the national question, which this book is the center, that's the center theme of the book. Are Chicanos oppressed by race? Are we oppressed by nationality? And our conclusion was that we're not a nation. We don't fit the criteria of a nationhood like Native Americans. We're more in line with African Americans, black Americans in this country. But we're different in a sense because we've had our own culture and a psychological makeup and our own language. It did begin with Spanish, but most of us today speak primarily English. I am fourth generation. It is very, very lucky that I can even speak Spanish now, which I can. But my parents were born in Texas, their parents were born in Texas, and their parents were born in Texas, which was then Mexico, because it was taken over by the United States.
Let's wrap up. Whatever else you'd like to say, and also talk about, you've probably touched on a lot of them, but talk.
It's basically what I just said a little bit earlier, but I think the main thing is that if we do not learn the lessons from our own history, we can never improve our future. And we have to, for Chicanos, we have to know where we came from, which most of us do. But I didn't know that until I took Chicano study classes in the University of Washington and have made myself very aware of our own culture and our own activism, because it isn't taught in schools. So this book is a great book to have in anyone's library or on campus. It's a very much an academic book. It has great footnotes, notes, and an index. It's very well written, I must say, and we have a great editor, Helen Gilbert, and Red Letter Press. We've dedicated it to Clara Frazier, who was our first editor, who's now deceased. But she began the Freedom Socialist Party after we split with the Socialist Workers Party. And she's the one that bridged the gap and came up with a theory of socialist feminism. She was the first one, Clara Frazier. And that is to say that there will be no revolution, no socialist revolution, without women and people of color and the most oppressed in leadership. And we don't mean that in a bourgeois way. We mean it in a very militant, radical way. So it's very good for Chicano study classes and for anybody who wants to use it for their women's studies classes. So I hope that with this tour, people will pick it up. It's only $19, which is not bad for over a 300-page book these days, paperback. And again, it's Viva La Raza, A History of Chicano Identity and Resistance. And it has a foreword by Rudolfo Acuña, who is a professor of Chicano studies at University of California at Northridge. He is the Chicano historian. And I'm so honored that he wrote the foreword for this. So thank you for having me on your program today.
One last question related to your book. Does the book address McCarthyism and how it relates to red baiting and anti-socialist sentiment that's out there today, including on the left?
Well, I'm really glad you asked that question because it does. Chicanos are very much a part of fighting McCarthyism. And because they were the most militants and usually were anarchists or socialists, again, because of their relationship with the Mexican Revolution, that what you found out is the CIO was very much built on the strength of the radical movement, radicals. It really radicalized a feature of the CIO. And then what happened is they started to get red baiting when the more conservative, more liberal types started taking control of the union. And they were definitely aced out of it. But I bring that up because I think it's really important that right now in our unions, we do have radicals and militants, socialists, communists, all stripes. And it's really important to really stand firm on what your beliefs are and what you're all about, because how are we going to educate the working people unless we tell them we're socialists and what that means? It doesn't mean communism and it doesn't mean Stalinism. We don't agree with that. That's why we call ourselves the Freedom Socialist Party. Unfortunately, the left, even though they were very strong and radicalizing the labor movement, unfortunately, the Communist Party made a lot of deals and, sold out a lot of different struggles, and people got disillusioned with the communist movement. But now I think there is definitely a revitalizing of the left, and as soon as we can learn better to work together and putting our differences aside, and we've done that, like in Los Angeles, I was part of a coalition to save Mumia, and all of the left came together, as well as some of the liberal organizations. And we kept that coalition going for quite a long time. And so it can be done, but we must all always stand against the red baiting, which means that they single you out because of your political thoughts and then try to have you not speak up and make it so you're afraid. Certainly the 2006 when the police beat heads in MacArthur Park at that immigration rights rally had a chilling effect today, because there weren't as many people out yesterday. And that was because of the police brutality. But at the same time, and of course with immigrants, it's a little different. If you don't have papers, it's a little hard for you to stand up under those circumstances sometimes. So it behooves the rest of us to really stand up for their rights and really expose the red baiting that's being done and defend them and defend ourselves in the process. We have a right to be socialists in this country. We have a right to be a political wing, just like the right wing is, we're the left wing. We have a right to that. Nobody goes out and red baits the right wing. In fact, the police and even some congressmen will defend the Minutemen and say it's okay for them to police the border. Who gave them the right to do that? But, you know, so we need to be exposing that. We need to be holding strong to our beliefs and remember that we need to have a socialist movement in this country. And frankly, the labor movement can't survive without the militants, the militancy of the radicals. It will go more and more conservative. And that's what happened. That's what history has taught us. That's what's in my book. Thank you.